Live from the front yard inside Ellis Island Casino, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Well, that was a good segue at the end of hour two by Willie. We were talking about the Raiders and just how dysfunctional and how little progress is being made right now. There doesn't seem to be a direction, and it's disappointing. You know, we want the Raiders to succeed. We built this $1 billion-plus investment stadium. It's over $2 billion. We gotta get NFL big games there. Get tourists, more and more of them, to come to town to watch their team face a really good Raiders team and organization. And right now, it's been a freaking struggle.
And you know what else, real quick, Steve, you know what else this, that shield, that Raider shield, yep, it's going to become tarnished for a few seasons as it continues to do this, I would think, and lose out on some, the town as a whole, on TV money. Because why would they want to put them on primetime TV?
I started exploding, and it wasn't on the air a couple weeks ago. When you see all the visuals coming in for a big national game, you know, the Monday Night Football game, this place was packed. Yep. We're here at Ellis Island, front yard, Cowboys.
Cowboys game.
And I'm like, that's why we spent the money. That's why we paid the big ticket to get into the NFL. We need five of these a year. But each year they have, you know, 2 to 6 wins, and it's a mess. What does the NFL owe us moving forward? You can't put them on more than once or twice. And that goes from 5 big weekends, you know, if we roll in Thursdays, to 4, then 3, then 2. I mean, are we going to be, you know, the freaking Saints at some point? The Browns? We're getting one? We get none after we spent all this money to get in? And you were kind of joking, tongue-in-cheek, kind of serious, about the most put-together football organization in town right now is UNLV. And we were all around watching UNLV struggle for years and years. Hell, the COVID year.
Decades.
For the COVID year, they went 0-6. They had weeks where they couldn't get freaking 53 guys ready to go. That was rock bottom. And believe me, I thought about that game a lot when I was up in Reno for the Cannon game, as it almost felt like the Rebels were pulling back a little bit to not crush the Wolfpack. It was 35-10 with 10 minutes left in the third, and I think everyone in the stadium was like, we just got to get the hell out of here. And think about where that – I remember the COVID game with Norvell coming to town, and he's like, I'm taking 17 deep shots. I don't care. I'm going to freaking pound these guys, annihilate them. There was actually a feeling like this is not freaking fair.
Do you remember?
That's how down the Wolfpack are right now. And then you got Choate last week, you know, whining about, you know, they got every freaking advantage. It's not fair. We're in the same state. It's not fair. Well, he and the Reno program have done that to themselves. Through a lack of success, they've done it to themselves. That's why they don't have a lot of funding.
Do you remember that Zoom press conference with Marcus Arroyo that week? No, it was his introductory press conference. I asked him about the rivalry, and he said, yeah, we're not really focused on that as much. We want to win every game. We're not prioritizing something to that effect. That didn't go over.
Well, the last two, we've pointed out a million times, there were a lot of mistakes that Marcus Arroyo made, because I think Marcus was unable to kind of listen to people at times and get advice and absorb it and use it. And Eric Harper, upon hiring Odom and Mullen, has clearly given him a laundry list of like, hey, these were the mistakes. Make sure you don't make these mistakes. And in fact, go out of your way to recognize that, you know, without saying there were mistakes, that you get it. Like, you get the rivalry. You understand it. And they got it. And right now they're way ahead of the Wolfpack program, and they won 42-17. They've made the Mountain West Conference title game. Now, For a third straight year, which is sick. They've got 30 combined wins. I mean, again, think back. Go back, 2016. We'll go. Just all you have to do is go back less than 10 years ago. The notion of competing with Boise on the football field, like even to stay within 10 points of them, it's not going to happen anytime soon. And now they've made the title game 3 straight years. They're now going to play Boise for the 5th time in two-plus seasons. I did see Chris Matthews over at 8 News Now say something to the effect of, you know, it took years and years for Boise to build this thing up to get to the point where they were a dominant franchise in the Mountain West Conference. It's only taken UNLV a couple of years to get to the same level. There's one important thing. They got to beat them. You're not on the same level. You got to beat them. Right now, this conference feels like about 3 years ago, Gonzaga in the West Coast Conference of Basketball. Like, you knew. Now, Gonzaga lost some of those games. No, but you knew that Gonzaga was going to be in the West Coast Conference final because it was like 20 straight years, and that's the feeling around the Mountain West. You're like, wait, Boise, they made it again?
Boise, San Diego, and Gonzaga, St. Mary's. Because you can't slight San Diego State because they had their time where they competed.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, Boise's football.
But Boise's the name in Mountain West. But I just want to – I'm just saying, like – so it's funny you mentioned that. 30 wins in 3 years. You know how long it took them to win 29 games collectively? 2014 to 2022, that's 9 seasons they had 29 wins. 9 seasons to get 29 wins. Last 3 seasons, 30.
That's crazy. I know. Spencer Danielson had his press conference today and did announce that, the quarterback, Maddox Madsen, who's had a lot of success against the Rebels, he's back.
7 games, 7 sellouts, and I really believe the best fan base in the country. Even with some hard moments this season, man, our Bronco Nation has been right there to support us, been through it with us and everything, and fired up for the opportunity on Friday at 6:00. In regards to any injury updates, Maddox Madsen practiced today, so he feels good. He's ready to roll, so he'll be our starting quarterback on Friday. Max will be ready to roll as well, but Maddox will be the starter. In regards to UNLV, got a ton of respect for Coach Mullen and what he's done. He's the only team in our conference to have 10 wins, and they've gotten better week in and week out. You see, I mean, they're a team on the rise. I mean, they've only lost 2 games this season. They're on the rise. They're playing really good football on both sides of the ball, and their players are making big-time plays.
That guy's a great coach. To go off on a tangent here for a second, I am shocked that UCLA – hired a dude with Pennsylvania and Northeast Corridor roots and Bob Chesney and didn't consider Spencer Danielson, who's a Californian. I think they blew that one. I think some of these American schools, American Conference, South Florida, Memphis, Tulane should all be considering Spencer Danielson. Kentucky should be considering him. Now, would he leave for any of those? I don't know, because they all come with their challenges. That guy is a great coach, and I'll say it, because I know there are people out there who think, you know what, Cofield, he's doing sidelines. He doesn't say stuff about UNLV. No, I do. I told you in hour one that I didn't think UNLV deserved to be in this title spot. Good for the computers, but they did lose to Boise, and they did lose to New Mexico. So by those optics, they probably shouldn't be in. Now, are they playing as well as anyone in the conference? Yes, probably better. So from that standpoint,
those metrics, those 4 metrics, are they only doing the conference games or the entire season?
No, it's the entire season. So which
is unfair.
So like Boise,
it's unfair.
Boise gets a benefit of Notre Dame going and smashing.
See,
Stanford.
In my opinion, it should be just the conference games. Yeah. It's the conference championship.
I mean, I think it's difficult for fans to deal with this. When you have these mega conferences, everyone doesn't play each other. But if you go round robin, basically, whatever games you did play, that the record probably should be the first tiebreaker. But here's the other thing I want to mention about, being honest about what we've seen. And again, I'm the sideline reporter, so I guess I'm not allowed to say stuff. I am. You know who says so? Me.
We're bringing you off the sideline.
I don't think UNLV had a great coaching staff game the first time against Boise. I thought Boise outcoached them on both sides of the ball. Now, we know Gunther has cleaned things up.
Big time.
So, if they play like they did there with, allowing like 14 chunk plays of 14-plus yards and missed assignments, they got no shot. Second half by Mullen and Corey Dennis, the OC, they got to be better because I thought they got out-schemed second half on. Broncos D against UNLVO. So And Mullen's pretty honest about it. He'll say it. Like, I made mistakes. I didn't do this well. Like, you know, Anthony Calandra threw a bad interception at the end of the first half in Reno, and he's like, that was my fault. That was a bad play call.
Calandra, their starting quarterback?
Let's hold off 1 second. I wasn't thrown to the bite yet, if you can stop it. Thank you. Go ahead, Willie.
And that's key, and I'm not knocking Barry Odom, but there's a team. No, what I was going to say is, no. Because what I was going to say is they weren't playing well defensively at the beginning of the season. Mullen's taking things on his, you know, to his blame. And when you have collectively an experienced coaching staff, so it sounds like I'm knocking Odom well. They did in the, you know, past 2 years. But they're going to learn and correct from those mistakes, and they have played well down the stretch. And I know people are going to say, well, the level of competition. I hate when people say that, like use that, like, yeah, well, the competition sucked the last four games. They weren't as strong as the earlier, so they didn't. Okay, but they won the way that they were supposed to win. If they didn't win the way they were supposed to win and they just got by, you'd be knocking them saying, but the level of play. So you can't have it both ways. And the fact is, they've gotten better, they've gotten stronger, and Mullen's experience in the SEC and with power teams is going to help in this situation. He should be able to correct them.
UNLV's defense started to turn the corner against Colorado State up there.
Yep.
They crushed them. CSU the next week against New Mexico. New Mexico barely got by them. Hawaii's playing really good football. They shut down the Hawaii offense. Hawaii this weekend played Wyoming, crushed them. So the defense, what the defense has done is mostly believable. They've cut out a lot of the chunk plays. Yep. Assignment football has been a lot better. And I thought you were actually going to go down the path with Odom on, well, and we'll have to hit this later in the week, about this team, I do believe, has its eyes on the prize. Unless there's something I don't know about behind the scenes and Mullen's negotiating a deal with his entire coaching staff to go somewhere else. But who the hell knows? Danielson talked about Anthony Calandria. I believe what he says here, Calandria has been as valuable and as good an offensive player as anyone in the conference.
Calandria, their starting quarterback, I mean, he's arguably playing better than almost anybody in our entire conference. That's offense or defense. I mean, everything runs through him. He does a phenomenal job there. Running back number 9 is probably one of the best running backs in our conference, too. Their offensive line works really well together. They pick their shots down the field, and they really find a way to attack you formationally. And we know we got our work cut out for us defensively.
And that formationally thing is very important because Boise found some solutions for all those formations, and UNLV, you know, didn't do the best job. We're going to get a better breakdown of this with Caleb Herring, who obviously was watching the game, broke it down, calling the game of what happened in the UNLV offense in that 56-31 game. It was all about the defense. That was all the post game talk, but I will tell you, Mullen also said, like, hey, the offense had some mistakes, we didn't get the job done in the second half. Danielson, the coach at Boise, his press conference today, he also talked about, as we just mentioned, Willie and I, that the Rebels defense under Paul Gunther the last four games has gotten better.
Their defense has really done a good job, and they've continued to tighten it up. They've got a really good secondary that makes it really tough. Any sort of pass game. They're one of the top third down defenses as well. They take the football away from you. And their front seven has done a good job stopping the run. They give you a lot of different looks. Their four down front and their linebackers. I mean, their linebacker number 8 is probably playing better than most linebackers in our conference. Their edge rusher number 1, I mean, he's a really good player. Like I said, their secondary is playing really well together. So they're rolling. They're creating turnovers. They're playing really, really hard on defense. And that shows. That shows in how they played. I mean, they play one of the top offenses in our conference in Hawaii. And played them really, really tough, and obviously had a big time win at home against them.
Yeah, one of the big media narratives on both sides, because Mullen had a press conference earlier, and that was after Danielson had his press conference. A lot of people want to lean on, hey, this has turned into, you know, quite the battle here. You've faced each other 5 times in the last 2.5 years, and one of the questions today, because both coaches have been like, yeah, I wasn't here. I'm not facing the same coach on the other side. One of the questions today in Boise was to try to compare the differences between Dan Mullen's Rebels and Barry Odom's teams.
There's obviously a lot of new players on UNLV's team that are doing a great job, quarterback being probably one of the biggest additions. And Dan Mullen, I mean, being an offensive guy, I mean, they are on the attack. I mean, I got a lot of respect for what they do offensively. As a team, they play really, really hard. They play together, right, in all three phases. Like, they know what they got to do offensively, defensively, special teams to win. I think the world of Coach Odom, too, at his time at UNLV. But this is a new team this season on UNLV. And like I said, there's not a lot of teams in the country that got 10 wins. And my hat's off to UNLV. They absolutely earned and deserved that. So this year, and they're on the rise, right? New team, new head coach, new staff. They're playing their best football right now, week 13. Now it's our goal to make sure we play our best.
But then Danielson got back to brass tacks, and that is, this is Boise's game. They're at home again. They're the king of the Mountain West Conference. It is a tradition. This is why the kids come to Boise, go to Boise to play in spots like this.
You come to Boise State to play in championship games. That's why you come here. Obviously, nothing's given, everything's earned, but being able to work our tails off to get back to the championship game, especially with a lot of our new players, either freshmen or some transfers that haven't played a championship game, haven't won a championship game, it's an exciting moment. That's really what, you know, my message to our guys on Sunday was just, hey, guys, at the end of the day, I mean, I wanted to use it as a teachable moment, too. There were moments this season that, honestly, people counted you out. We weren't good enough. I'm not good enough. All these things. And we had to block out the outside noise and just stay in the fight, get up off the mat, keep swinging, focus on us, love on each other, not assuming anything in the future, just being where our feet are. And I'm proud of our team doing that, stacking a win, and then absolutely fired up for our team to be in the championship game.
He should be. And I know you made a face when he said people counting us out. He's talking about on the ground in Boise. Their fans are incredibly critical. And remember, they got beat up and manhandled. They got embarrassed against South Florida. They weren't that competitive against Notre Dame. They were terrible offensively against San Diego State. Their expectations are 10 wins plus, now compete for a CFP berth. And this was well below their expectations. Then when Mattson got hurt, the backup quarterback was terrible to start. So they actually have come off the deck to make this game.
Who has more pressure on them, Broncos or Rebels?
Probably Boise, because they've dominated the series so much.
I say Boise because of the very last sound you just put. Not because Calandria, not because Rebels D has gotten better, not because they want revenge, not because Mullen different. None of these. Not because Mattson's back. Because of the last thing that you just said, that they said. With UNLV, they're being told that they don't belong here. They've lost twice to Boise. They're the inferior team. They got to go up to Boise. You put that speech on them from that last clip that you just sounded, and all these guys are thinking, we better not lose. Mullen finds something to go on, and these guys get a little bit of momentum in the second half. Pressure's on Boise, and they may feel it.
Yeah, it's weird. As a Las Vegas talk show host, I feel like I'm doing a pump-up of Spencer Danielson for their fans, but I would tell their fans, you're morons. They are. Like, they overcame a lot this year. They had high expectations. It didn't work out. This guy brought him back from the brink again. And by the way, he did it a couple years ago when they fired the coach and he was the interim. So I would look to the stars if I'm a Boise fan and go, please allow us to have Danielson for a couple more years, because we know at this point we probably don't deserve him. And with the college football landscape, he is going to be gone at some point.
You know me, I'm always going to compare it to things I know, but the way you just explained that in terms of going for his head or just being mad, upset, blah, 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 sounds like a certain team here in Las Vegas that just won their third championship.
Yeah, she did an amazing job.
14-14, and everyone said, well, it's been nice, but she's run her course. Let's get rid of Becky. Get rid of everybody but Asia. Just relax. Fans, just relax.
Yeah, they're not going to, though.
Never. Never. Especially in this town.
Well, and this town is very demanding, too. No doubt. All right, on the way back, Caleb Herring is going to check in. We'll get to some NFL action and also start to handicap. Well, one, we'll react to what happened in Reno, what went right. Very little went wrong aside from some penalties, but also start looking deep divey at the matchup, because Boise really did solve all of the Rebel questions in the second half in that first game when it was 56-31 in Boise. Yep, UNLV in the Mountain West Conference title game. Again, pretty surreal. Got the job done in Reno and did it in impressive fashion. Then the computers, the nerds, intentionally screwed over San Diego State, New Mexico. Now that's computer polls, and I don't know, let's ask Caleb Herring Caleb, I want to open by asking you, deep down, do you think the Rebels, in spite of benefiting from the computers, do they deserve to be in this game?
I think so. I think with the way that this, with the way that the season went, I think, you know, having a 10-win team has to mean something. Maybe I'm old school when it comes to that, but that they had the better season in terms of the win-loss results. And I think that's, when you look at the body of work for a season, I think that's the most important thing. And I understand, you know, the conference record should matter when we talk about conference championships, and you know, the winning outright back in the day when that used to be a thing for most conferences. But if all other, if that record is tied, if the conference record is tied, I think the next best thing, in my opinion, for rating a team season is their overall record. Yeah. And I think UNLV had the best overall record. They had the best overall record in the conference. And you can argue that scheduling has a lot to do with that. And I think Boise State had a top 10 difficulty to schedule, which tip your hat to them. But the results of that were that they had a worse overall record. And New Mexico and San Diego State obviously are in the same boat when it comes to that in the overall record. They didn't have the same overall record as the Rebels. And so I think the Rebels deserve to be there. Now, I think the other three probably have a big argument amongst themselves in terms of, and this is just how I look at the season, in terms of New Mexico and San Diego State looking at Boise for that same reason, saying, well, their overall record isn't as good as ours. So how are they in over us? So there's always going to be an argument for a snub or that it's not fair, but I think the rules of the game were pretty simple going into things. And I think the 10-2 record for UNLV maybe has a lot to do with why the computers decided that they need to be in the game. And, you know, I think it is what it is. If everybody didn't know the rules and understanding going into the thing, you could say you got snubbed. But I think right now the two teams that everybody thought would be there are there. And I think if anybody has a complaint, it should be to remove Boise and get in instead of Boise, not to remove UNLV from it.
Yeah, a lot of this came down to the quality of the losses in conference, right? That UNLV lost to two of the top teams, and meanwhile San Diego State and New Mexico had at least one bad blemish on their record.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of the confusing thing to me as people kind of reacted to the selection by the Mountain West Conference, because everybody kept pointing out that in the head-to-head, UNLV had lost to two of the other teams that were tied. And I mean, if the head-to-head was a metric that was used, then that would have been, you got to say that's fair if you're UNLV. Like, yeah, that we don't have the head-to-head record to get in over Boise. But because that wasn't even used, I think it turned into a more realistic conversation because, like you said, UNLV lost to two other teams that were tied for first in the conference. So those would be considered, in my opinion, quality losses if you're going over the eye test of the season. For New Mexico to lose, albeit a long time ago, to a team that's not even bowl eligible, not even a four-win team, I think that it would be considered a blemish anywhere else, right? And the same thing with Boise. The quality of losses, obviously Boise had some tough losses in a non-conference schedule, but even within conference, you know, that loss to Fresno State sort of later in the year and by such a large margin, I think was very impactful. I think Boise handled UNLV, and I think Boise was probably at the peak of their season in October. And UNLV was not, clearly. So I think that has to count for something as well. There's plenty of things, though. I think just losing two games to the top opponents in conference shouldn't be a disqualifying factor. I think that should be kind of a badge of honor because if you look big picture, college football playoff or national rankings, I think those two losses, being the only two losses, would actually help UNLV's narrative or their case for being in the top 25 because they did lose to 9-win, 8-win teams. So it's a very strange argument depending on which side you're arguing from, but I think UNLV being in is the right decision for the conference, and based on how well they're playing in the month of November especially, I think it's clear to me that they're one of the top teams, top two for sure.
Battle for the Mountain West Conference title Friday night in Boise. Coverage starts here at 2:00 with the Cofield and Company live in Boise, 4:00 with the Ted Wiens pregame show, kickoff at 5:00. Before we look ahead to the Boise matchup, let's look back for a second. You were part of teams that were trying to snap a long losing streak for UNLV against Reno. So as you're watching UNLV storm to a 4th straight victory for the Cannon, 6 of 8, and it's 35-10 with like 10 minutes left in the third quarter, was there any part of you that was like, man, can we just get the hell out of here? This is a freaking walkover. Or were you really enjoying it? Like, I like this prosperity. Pound them.
I think there's a little bit of both. I did, you know, you start to think about stuff as a spectator, like health, you know, games in hand, penalties, you know, crazy things happen in those kind of games. The team loses focus, whatever, a targeting call against somebody in the second half that could hurt the future schedule. So you do start to think like, okay, let's just get out of here. I think we mission accomplished. Let's go home. Especially when it got chippy. I think there's a point in the third quarter and into the fourth quarter, things got a little chippy and it's like, okay, let's rein this in and make sure we get our guys out of there safe and sound. So that definitely happened. But then at the same time, in the back of your head, you're like, but the computers, though, like I don't want to leave any doubt out here. You know, you're looking more defensively. In my estimation, what's the most important part was holding the Wolfpack under 20 points. I think we had a point where UNLV could have maybe made it a 10-point total, which looked a lot better in any sort of computer metrics for a defensive performance. So there was that thought, like, hey, defensively, don't let up. But, hey, let's get Calandra out of the game. Let's get Jet out of there. You know, let's make sure we go into the prep for whatever the next game is with a healthy roster. But there was also the satisfaction of, like, saying, hey, my team is up right now on the Wolfpack, and obviously they're my rival going through college. And I think the rivalry has been interesting because the pendulum has swung so extremely back and forth in the rivalry. There's never been – at least to my knowledge, a team where both programs were at the peak of their athletic department's height, right? Like, it wasn't like UNLV and Reno have been good at the same time or in contention for the conference championship at the same time. There's been times where UNR dominated rivalry, right? And I was unfortunately a part of some of that. So now we're enjoying a time where UNLV is dominating. And you can point to whatever the reasons. You can cry about it if you want to. But right now, it's okay for UNLV fans and alum to enjoy the success against the Wolfpack and continue to build a streak so that maybe, you know, 10 years down the line, we'll look back and say, boy, that was a stretch where UNLV dominated the rivalry, and hopefully doesn't end at four.
You know, the more I'm around Mullen, obviously this happens when you're around anyone, the more I learn about him and the notion that he's some sort of happy-go-lucky guy and chill and he's just out there having fun could not be further from the truth. Because of the Rebels' personal foul issues in the second half and eight offsides by the defense, I think in the moment he couldn't enjoy the victory. He even apologized to the media. He's like, I'm sorry I'm being so negative. Now, that all said, those offsides issues, and they were a problem early in the season. They cleaned them up. Is that something Boise should be licking its chops about? Is there a way Boise can really take advantage of UNLV's lack of discipline, especially in this Reno game?
I think so, and I think they did a little bit in the first matchup. And it wasn't necessarily the cadence trying to get them to draw offsides like teams like Miami of Ohio and UNR did. I think that was a very intentional game plan on those two teams. So Boise had that reference point for Miami of Ohio, and there was like six, I believe, false starts on hard counts for UNLV. So they know, and they understand that that's something they could do. I think more importantly for that was the tempo associated with it, because if you look back at Miami, Ohio, and at the Reno game, it was the tempo that kind of threw UNLV's defense into sort of a chaotic frenzy, trying to just get lined up. And when you're in that kind of frenzy, a hard count, you think you're late to the snap, and then you're more apt to jump in that situation. I think that's where UNLV is defensively when that starts to happen. So I don't know that tempo is necessarily something that Boise wants to implement. So I don't think they, in their system, want to do that. They have a lot of different personnel packages, tight ends on the field, and going from 12 to 13 personnel to back to 11 pretty quickly. So I don't think the tempo will be a factor. It also is just the nature of UNLV's defense. I think they have, I don't want to say a complicated defense, but like any pro defense, there's a lot of adjustments that need to be made based on formation, personnel, and things like that, that make it a little tougher to get lined up at times. As the seasons progress, I think they're better and more accustomed to checking in and out of plays based on the motions. Which was not the case in the first matchup against Boise. I think they were still learning how to do those kind of things on the fly without needing, you know, the coach to get them into the right play. So I think maybe that minimizes things, but it was bad. I mean, there was a point where I was kind of speechless about it on the broadcast, because it literally was the offense that kept Reno in the game. Like, that was the 5-yard penalty was their greatest weapon.
Yeah. Caleb Herring is with us, former Rebel football player. UNLV's in the title game of the Mountain West Conference for the third straight year against Boise. And it's been nearly impossible to knock off the Broncos. Game one was a 56-31 victory by the Broncos. It was 28-24 at the half. I thought the UNLV staff got out-coached in the second half on both sides of the ball. You can tell me if you disagree. How about we start with the defense? Why did the defense have so much trouble, especially on outside action? What was the problem on the UNLV defense on those runs against those three running backs who combined for 266 total yards and four touchdowns?
Well, I think the biggest thing was something that was well-documented all season. It was the gap integrity and understanding the gap assignments. I think especially with a team like Boise, I mentioned the 13 personnel, the use of the tight ends, unbalanced formations that are discreetly put out on the field where it's like tackle over and you don't even realize it, kind of playing with the formations and motions that create extra gaps on the line. And, again, making those on-the-fly adjustments. A simple motion from a guy across the line of scrimmage might be easy enough to adjust to. But if four people shift before that motion, now not only do you have to know what the new gaps are, but then you have to adjust from that new gap to whatever the motion dictates you. And I think Boise does a great job. They have historically of doing that pre-snap kind of stuff that really screws with the schemes of any defense, really, but especially UNLV at that time. I think execution obviously was just a big factor defensively, giving up those explosive plays. And you got to tip your hat to Boise. I think they're one of the best offensive units in terms of their experience, their discipline, and their execution and knowledge of the game plan. And a lot of that had to do with Magic Mattson and his efficiency and getting the right plays called and whatnot. I think there was a pivotal point in that game. And I think, yes, of course, the defense gave up a lot of explosive plays. You mentioned it was 28-24 at the half, and the offense put up 24 points and a half, ended up getting over 30 points in the whole ball game. But I think the start of the third quarter, there was an opportunity, and UNLV has let opportunities like this slip all season long, but there's an opportunity to really change the momentum in a ball game. The defense came out and actually put out a three and out in the first possession for the Broncos. They got the offensive ball back. There was a third and short. I believe it was third and five or four UNLV had on their opening possession of the second half. And Jet Thomas caught a pass and was right near the chains and, for whatever reason, went laterally instead of getting vertical and picking up that first down. And, you know, fans are probably saying, you should have went for it on fourth down. But I think not getting that conversion, not keeping that possession alive and scoring what would have been the go-ahead touchdown on that possession really changed the outlook on the rest of that ball game. And I think kept the fans in. I think there might have been a little sense of panic had that possession gone differently. Obviously, the game's bigger than one possession. I think pivotal moments like that all season long have kind of crippled UNLV. Even when there's times where they could take over a game when they're already leading, they've missed out on those kind of opportunities. And you can't do that against a good team like Boise.
Caleb Herring's up on ESPN Las Vegas. I highly recommend when you put on the game on Friday night, put the game on and then sync it to radio and listen to Caleb break down a game. Because one of the great things that you do, Caleb, is that while on TV, we'll see the primary play, right? We'll see a quarterback and he finds a target and it might work, it might not work. You are like in freaking warp speed immediately diagnosing like, hey, this was open, this was available. I remember in that Boise game on the sideline there was a missed opportunity for Calandria. Mullen came over and Mullen simply said, just trust what we're doing. I don't know if you remember the case, but what happens when a quarterback doesn't trust what you're supposed to do?
Trust and confidence are the biggest intangibles that a quarterback has. Every play, you have to trust somebody other than yourself to do your job. And that's part of why I love the position and all of its complexities. You have to be able to trust that your left tackle's got that block or that the center got the right adjustment at the line of scrimmage and they're going the right way. That your receivers caught your check that you sent out. There's trust all over the place when you're playing quarterback. And sometimes when you don't trust what the game plan was, you miss out on opportunities to exploit things. And I think what Mullen probably in that moment and what most coaches giving that kind of nugget on the sideline are trying to say is like, hey, do what we thought we would need to do so that we can understand what the plan needs to be for the next time. Yeah, you might not win that rep. You might not see it quite as cleanly. But if I'm telling you that that out is open, for instance, take the out. And you might not see it as a big play, but that play is probably setting something else up. And I think at this point in the season, Calandria has demonstrated that he's got a deeper trust for Corey Dennis and Dan Mullen and what they're trying to accomplish and how the offense will evolve based on his execution of those little things. And now he trusts it, I think, fully. I think he's talked about it with the press that Dan Mullen and him have a great relationship in that regard, and he trusts him with the preparation and with what he's saying. And moments like that are going to help him grow, and he's already grown, I think, into the Mountain West Player of the Year, offensively or otherwise. He's been that special because of those kind of nuggets from Mullen and that quarterback whisper mentality that he has on the sideline.
Boise may wind up shutting down the UNLV offense on Friday, but it's not for lack of trying or lack of creativity because, as you pointed out, and Mullen kind of jokes, like, hey, we got a lot of plays. We're not going to leave any on the cutting room floor. We got to use them before the season's over. They've had new weapons emerge and new plays emerge. And a couple of things to mention, they've used Caden McGee and JoJo Earl, receivers in running situations more. And then the other thing against Reno, they used the wildcat of sorts or direct snap to the running back. Is that all stuff they could actually use against Boise, and will it work?
Yeah, I think more importantly than if they use it heavily or not, because they showed a lot of things in the last couple weeks. And I think more importantly than if they use it against Boise or not, is that Boise has to prepare for them in the week leading up. So whether or not Boise takes it away and they don't, you know, have success with JoJo Earl around the edge on the direct snap, or, you know, Jet doesn't score on a direct snap in the championship game, just the fact that the defense has to think and consider and prepare for those things in a way that they wouldn't have had to 3 weeks ago. They definitely didn't have to prepare for direct snap to Jet Thomas in October when the teams met. So that, I think, creates a little bit of an advantage schematically where, hey, you spend X amount of hours game planning, scheming it up, figuring out what exactly it is. And I think Boise is a well-coached team, and it's not going to stress them necessarily, but that's just one more thing to add to their game plan. I think that's the biggest benefit of the evolution of this offense. Also, just players. Sometimes it's the dudes getting the ball now. I think JoJo Earl is one of those things. Regardless how they're getting him the ball, when he touches it, it's like, hold your breath. He has the juice to take it the distance. So I think that's important. I think Lyons also in the receiving room added some depth there with his development and his on-the-field play. So the personnel as well as the evolution of the offense, I think, give Boise a different animal to prepare for than they had in October.
Let's go one step deeper. On a gadget play where JoJo Earl's getting the ball directly, Kalander is splitting out. What would you do off of that? If they're paying too much attention to JoJo, what's a play you could do off of that that's not that play?
I'm going to be careful here because I don't want to give it away. I don't want to say, you know, anything that leads to an inside scoop here. Even if I can tell you right now, I don't know what Dan Mullen has cooked up, but I don't even want to speak on the possibilities. I think with what this roster has from a talent perspective, you could agree, and I think everybody would understand this is fair to say, that the potential is limitless for what you can do with that personnel group, with that formation. I think you can get as tricky as you want to with it, and I think that's kind of the point. They want you to think about the possibilities and not necessarily zero you in on what they're trying to set up with that formation and with that structure of the play. So I, out of fear of hindering UNLV here, I'm going to be a homer for a second. I will not say what I think the possibilities are, but they are there, let's just say it. I think everybody who knows Dan Mullen and knows Corey Dennis this season will agree that there's something that could happen, and it's going to be pretty special how it impacts the game.
Last few days in the NFL, not good times for the Rams, the Colts, the Eagles. Who are you worried the most about?
I would say I'm probably – I don't say worried is not my thing. I think there's potential for them to fall out of the top spot with the Colts. I think they're probably systematically unraveling the worst. I think there's some issues with the Eagles that have more to do with off-the-field stuff than anything, and it's finally catching up to them a little bit, but I think their roster is what their roster is. There's still questions around Daniel Jones, even as successful as the Colts were early in the year. But as it unravels, I think the pressure now shifts to Daniel Jones and that narrative. Shane Steiger's been great, but has he coached through this kind of adversity when there's expectations? So I don't necessarily think as a head coach he has, and that's why they're probably the most concerning. I think the Rams and the Eagles will likely be the NFC Championship game if all things go according to plan. I think those teams are experienced veterans who know how to get the job done at the end of the day, and I think they'll figure it out come playoff time. But the Colts, I think, are a really good time, especially with the way the Texans are playing right now. The Texans are coming for the Colts in the AFC with that defense. So they're the most worrisome of that three.
Monday Night Football here at the Front Yard, Ellis Island. Presented by Boomer Sportsbook. Follow them up on socials at Bet with Boomer. 10-0 game right now. Pats are on top of the Giants. I got a minute left here. Let's go back to college football for a second. Aside from trying to be a tough guy and threaten some Cub reporter on the field, did Lane Kiffin really do anything wrong in this whole deal where he coached out his team and is now going to be the LSU coach?
I can't say he did anything wrong. I think the system is wrong. I think the fact that this was even allowed to be something that any coach is presented with is wrong. And he's not the only coach that had to make that decision. In fact, there's like four group of five coaches that are potential CFP candidates that had to make that same decision and are now moving on elsewhere. They're not getting a national publicity of Lane Kiffin for obvious reasons, but it's a really messed up system. I do think, though, that there's something to, and I'm a man of integrity. I enjoy keeping my word. I think there's value in that for my life outside of finances that matters to me. I don't think Lane Kiffin has demonstrated that he is such a person. And that's just as fair and as gently as I can put it. So I feel for the Ole Miss Rebels who are doing something special, have an opportunity to make a lasting impact and leave their names in the history books at Ole Miss. And now it's likely that they won't get that full opportunity. It's because of the lack of commitment from their head coach. So while I can't accuse him of doing anything wrong, I will say it wasn't right by those Ole Miss players.
Caleb, great job, man. See you later in the week.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a good one.
There he is, Caleb Herring, the former Rebel quarterback. He's part of the broadcast team for the Rebels. Patriots have gone up 16, pending extra point, 17-0. This is sickening. God, I hate the Patriots. It just brings up bad memories of the past. On the way back, though, one more thing on Lane Kiffin. And if I heard one more guy, especially NFL guys, who are like, there's a lack of leadership in college football. They've got to change this schedule. How, guys? Tell me how.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Well, Willie had this one right, at least based on the start. Patriots were up 17-0. I thought Giants would compete, but as Willie mentioned during the break, Patriots were a very popular public dog that is often death.
Giants were a popular dog.
Yeah, I meant Giants. Sorry about that. Giants were the dog, and a lot of people were on the Giants plus the 7. So right now, not working out. 17-0.
Yeah, I wasn't buying into it. There were a lot of people. They were talking about the injuries, the fact that Patriots are banged up on the offensive line. Thought that could hurt against an aggressive defensive front. The problem that I have with that, the Patriots have won at home by 29-19, a one-point game in 13, an average of 15.5 points per game. That defense of theirs, 14th in the league, flip side, the Giants stop unit, second to last in terms of opponents' offensive drives ending in a turnover. Right, so the Patriots' defense have actually been a little more efficient in getting the ball back, forcing turnovers. Pats have a potent pass attack. I'm banking on their D. And it's the last game before a bye week. It's sort of an exhale, right? A lot of teams have had their bye weeks. I mean, they're one of the last ones that are looking forward to one. So I felt the Giants' defense was a little inconsistent against both the run and the pass. 29th and allowing 2.51 points per drive. So New York losing 6 in a row. Last week, overtime loss in Detroit. 0-7 away from Jersey. They've lost by an average of 8.5 points per road game. So a lot of the notes that I had for today would have said earlier, but too late.
You said them. I believe you. I believe you had them. I don't think you just made them up and said, hey, I got to bring these up right now. Back in the bag for a second.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
So Willie's here for Monday Night Football for the party, giving away some of those all-you-can-eat specials. They have all-you-can-eat here for less than $50. All-you-can-drink spirits, all-you-can-drink beer for less than $50. It's good for all sessions of pro football, Monday night, Thursday night, and the three sessions on Sunday. So come on down. You can get one of those great prizes. He's got other goodies to give away. Happy hour goes until 7 o'clock. That's $5 beers and $7 on the bites, $7 on some other drinks, and it is a Mega Monday. 2-for-1 on the 50-ounce drinks like the Mega Rita and the Mega Sangria. We're back tomorrow with a full show. Willie, good job today. Appreciate you stepping up at the beginning of the show when I was over at UNLV covering the Mullen press conference. Look for the audio and video.